Hey, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And I'm doing something I haven't done in a while, the sort of cold open and chatting with you guys for a little bit before the interview. And the interview today is with Chris Roman, and she works in wine at a variety of restaurants, Antler, George. Really fun. Like, this is someone I've known for years in the wine industry. I think you're really going to enjoy it. But a bunch of people were asking me to go in a little more detail about my magnificent failure for the Quartermaster Sommelier for the second level, the certified level, and specifically for service. Because I think I said I failed and how I, you know, was mispouring the champagne, or really sparkling wine. Let's face it, the court isn't going to be, you know, opening up some good grower champagne or some vintage stuff, especially for the certified level. So people wanted to know what specifically happened. So I figured I would tell you really quick, then give a couple observations about being in Florida, and then we'll get to the interview. So what happened is the first thing you do, or one of the first things you do after you greet the person, and this is for service, and it was for a sparkling service, is you have to put down the stemware. And you go up to the table, and there's one judge, but you assume that there is four people at the table. So you've got to do the service as if four people are sitting at the table, even though only one person is. It sounds odd, but that's just the way it works. So my first mistake, and the one that started me on this just bleep storm of horribleness, was I put the first glass down at the wrong spot. Instead of putting it to the right of the guest, I put it to the left. So I made a very early mistake. But what I've often been told is that you've got to be consistent. Now, I'm sure I could have just taken the first glass, put it back on the right side, apologized, moved on. But I was really nervous. I was uncomfortable. I don't work in service. So for me, this was really alien. I mean, much, much harder than theory or tasting. So I decide, okay, I put the wrong glass to the left of the guest. I better do that for all four spots. Well, the problem with that is when I'm pouring the champagne, my arm now goes, because I have to, you know, I'm to the right of the guest. So you can imagine it, I'm to the right of the guest, but I've got to pour the champagne, which is now in the left corner of the guest. So my arm is going right in front of the judge, who is, you know, an incredibly accomplished individual in the world of wine. I'm intimidated enough. And now my arm that is starting now to shake a little bit is right in the eye line of the judge, which is an absolute disaster. That then starts the mistakes, the spilling of the wine, I'm sure at least once my bottle of cheap Prosecco must have touched one of the glasses, probably his glass, so that he could get a view of just my incompetence at this moment. It was, it was a disaster. Like, if you're going to write about, or, you know, you're going to create a scene about someone failing service, woo, what I did would work perfectly for that. At this point, now I'm not smiling. Now I'm uncomfortable. I'm sure that, imagine the most uncomfortable you ever felt at a restaurant with whoever was serving you. I think the comfort level for me and the judge was that they were a hostage, and I'm the one forcing them to videotape them, sort of a proof of life video. You know, you got to hold the newspaper up. So I created an uncomfortable environment. I'm not smiling. I'm stuttering when they're asking me for recommendations for what wine they should have for their food. I'm giving horrible answers. I remember the judge actually said, oh yeah, me and my friends, you know, imaginary, we've just bought the CN Tower. You know, at this point, I should have been more excited, but I was like, oh, all right, there you go. And then they were going to order, you know, lamb or something. And I don't know, I think I recommended low-level Burgundy. I mean, if someone's, you know, getting the, you know, if someone's just bought the CN Tower and they were having lamb, I should have recommended some sort of, you know, Grand Cru Chambertin, or, you know, something, Chambou Moussigny, whatever, DRC, Latache, Richebourg, name it. No, I think I did some Village level Burgundy because this first thing came in my head. And I probably could pronounce it correctly. So that was a little more in depth about how I failed service for the certified level of the Court of Master Sommelier. Spent the last week in Florida, and when I'm there, I just try to drink mostly California wines, Washington State, Oregon, because you can get cheaper deals than you can here in Canada. And first off, I got to tell you, my favorite combination, give me a slightly oaky Chardonnay with like a crunchy grouper sandwich. It's one of my favorite combinations. And I'm not picky. You know, give me La Crema. Not, hell, you can give me something even less expensive than that. I mean, that to me is my, it's my jam. It's you know, it's my guilty pleasure and it's fantastic. And I think the one thing I'll say is if you do looking for it and on this podcast, you know, I'll maybe passive aggressively, but I'll take shots at a lot of California wines, especially Napa Cabernet. And the main problem is you, it's incredibly hard to get a $19 to $25 bottle of Napa Cabernet that actually tastes like a Cabernet Sauvignon grape and doesn't taste like a lot of chemicals or sugar. But if you go hunting around and if you get a little bit off the beaten path, you can find for $25 around there, really good stuff from Washington State, California, and Oregon. And whether it's Cab or a blend or Pinot, and I love Washington State makes some great Merlots. Up in Washington State, also some fantastic Syrahs, especially east of the Cascade Mountains. There's a lot of good stuff. It's one great thing I love about being in the States is I get to explore it and try stuff I don't normally get at the LCBO. So, I want to apologize for the audio quality. Me and Chris Roman, we are at this restaurant, Biff's Bistro, and that's where we went for dinner. So there was something going on with the mics, and it's not Chris's fault. I don't know. She might have had it a little bit low, but I should have done some adjusting, and I didn't. So there's going to be a couple points where she's peaking, and I'm just going to tell you, that's not how she sounds. She's going to sound weird and distorted, like some sort of female shrill Max Headroom. And if you're under 40, you're going to have to Google what that means. But I want to apologize to Chris because her voice is far more lovely than you're going to hear it at some moments. I played around with it to try to make it better. And if I was smart, I probably could. But let's face facts. I have a BlackBerry. My TV is 14 years old. The fact that I can actually upload these podcasts on my own is a bleeping miracle. Anyway, thank you very much for everyone who's been listening. Please tell your friends. We got a lot of great podcasts I've got saved. I'm thinking actually of starting to release two a week. I'm sort of debating that. If you have any thoughts on that, shoot me up. Hit me up on a you can tweet me at mcause56. My Instagram account, I think it's Matthew Cause. I don't think it's Matt. I think it's the full name. You'd think I would know that off the top of my head, but I don't. Anyway, without further ado, here is Lindsay Hamilton from TSN, from SportsCenter, with the intro. Thanks for listening.
The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People. And my next guest is definitely very interesting. I won't be able to use any of my notes because we're in a crammed restaurant. We're at Biff's in Toronto, great French joint. Christine Roman is joining me. Christine, thank you so much for being part of the pod.
Hi, Matt. I am reading a French menu and am enjoying your company tonight.
Yeah. Now, I want to first, because I have all my notes, but we're at a small table, so I can't actually go through them. Can you tell the listeners exactly what it is you do, like your full titles? Because my first question was going to be, when do you sleep?
I don't sleep. No, I do sleep. Everyone needs to sleep, but what do I do? So I've been in the wine industry for almost 10 years, in and out, in different capacities. But right now, currently, I actually work for a national retailer, and I do search. Yeah. And you're like, well, that's not wine-related. So I went down this path about a year and a half ago, and then I've still been doing wine on the side. So yeah. I'm still some. I still buy the wines at Antler. So that's my main, the list that I take care of. I nurture that every week. I'm always ordering every single week. Even though my girlfriends always tell me I'm crazy. So I buy wines at Antler, which is in Dundas West. We've had a fun little adventure this year.
Oh, we're going to talk about Antler.
Oh, yeah. So that was a fun one. And then I saw him at George.
Yeah.
So when I can on the weekends, and even when I'm working during the week, I will go from one to right to the other.
Wine that is crazy. So you have a full-time job, and then you deal with the wine list at Antler, and you saw him and serve and do stuff with George. And for people who don't know, George is a fantastic high-end, you know, it's your fancy dining.
Oh, yes, white tablecloths and all.
White tablecloth, fantastic list on Queen East, around Queen and Church.
Yeah.
Queen and Jarvis.
Yep.
Right around.
Beautiful historic building. It's an old historic building, and I actually did my sommelier certification there. So there's my heart, you know, kind of, I have the memories there. Every time I walk on that floor, I remember that moment becoming a sommelier in that building.
Yeah.
And it's such an honor to really work there, actually.
It's funny. We all have our moments. Like for me, when I got my diploma, I found out in the elevator in my condo because I wanted to open the envelope up before I saw my girlfriend. Because if I didn't get it, I needed to emotionally set myself in the right spot. So I looked in and it was a crowded elevator.
So your elevator is a special moment for you.
That it does, yeah. And I remember it was a crowded elevator and I just looked at it and it said that I passed and I didn't, you know, I didn't throw any emotion outwardly, just all inwardly until I got to my condo. So I kept it all to myself.
See, I'm an extrovert, so I could not do that.
I'm an extrovert as well, but I just like, I don't want to freak out everyone on this elevator. I live in the building with these people. They're going to know. So we're going to have to make sure that, do you already know someone? Of course you already know
I'm
someone.
I'm not too sure. I may know someone in the building.
You know, one reason why I'm doing this interview is because Christine knows everyone. Yep. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Don't worry about it. We're doing it. Don't worry. You can interrupt.
Don't worry about us. Don't worry about us.
So Christine knows everyone. Every wine event I go to, you're there. I don't think I've ever been to a wine event, wine tasting. I'm sure you're going to be there for the
during the day.
Chili.
It's harder for me, but yes.
Well, no, you're there at all of them. Like I always expect to see you there. And do you know who that person was that just approached our table? Or?
Not really.
Oh, so that was just
probably an old family friend of mine.
Oh, okay.
But someone did approach our table just now, very warmly.
Yeah.
But it happens all the time. But back to, I guess, you know, I love seeing Matt always at events, and I love introducing you to new people. I think that's always such a natural part.
Yeah. But you're a connector.
I do love putting new people together, and I love watching new relationships form.
Yeah, absolutely.
But because I've been in the industry for almost 10 years in different capacities, from actually helping make wine or working at a winery, being on the agent side and the sommelier side, I've really had such an interesting perspective, and I've met so many amazing people. So that's how I've been able to stay connected to the industry because even though I'm in my late 30s, it's been 10 years.
Oh, yeah, you've been in for ages, and you know, you're knowledgeable and you know, good energy, but also you're nice. And that helps. By the way, cheers.
Oh, cheers.
Cheers.
By the way, I'm not drinking wine right now. I apologize.
It's okay. Well, what are you drinking?
In honor of my girlfriends who love bitter, and you know who you are, I'm doing a paper plane.
What's in the paper plane?
A paper plane is a little more on the bitter side. I love the lemon base on it, and it's got an Aperol.
Yeah. Nice.
Beautiful, nicely shaken. I'm still getting into... I'm not there on a Negroni yet, much to... Most Psalms will just crush a Negroni.
They love them. The Negroni. Some of my friends do as well. And I'm not a great liquor guy. I'm basically bad beer and good wine. Mm. I'll go from nice Burgundy to Coors Light. And I'm unapologetic about it. But I've never been so much like scotch and whiskey. Never been for me. Mm. I appreciate it. Mm. I can tell it's good. Like I'm like, okay, this is a really well-made drink. But it's just not for me. Mm. So
I love a good cocktail. It's a nice. We had a little bit of a wine night last night, so it's nice to have a little break and balance.
What is a little bit of a wine night? What does that mean?
There were multiple magnums, so it was a lovely night. But sometimes it's a nice break for your palate, and it's also nice to challenge and try new flavors just to help it keep it balanced.
Yeah. By the way, you can tell you're a wine person. It wasn't we had a lot of bottles. It was multiple magnums.
Magnums are doubles. They are the best. No. They're actually rare to find here. We were all commenting how hard it was. It is a little tricky being in our market, trying to find really good magnums. I actually travel and I try to find them whenever I can.
Yeah.
But it's hard. They're hard here in this market.
All right, let's talk about Antler. Let's go with the fun one first. So people don't know, Antler.
They're both fun. I love
both of them. I'm just talking in terms of newsworthiness.
Oh, yes. Okay.
That's what I'm talking about. Antler is very much farm to table, very fresh. Not one of these people that uses the term loosely. A lot of game meats, interesting meats, foie gras, a lot of tartare. Yeah. Just pushing the boundary meat place. Like, you're going to be challenged. It's not just burger
but
and chicken.
But also vegetarian as well. And even though our name is Antler, foraging is a big part of what we do. Mm-hmm. So even from the cocktails are all foraged. Whenever we can, we do it. And I know it's, even though we've had the year of the vegans last year, we do have a lot of even beautiful, I mean, one of my favorite dishes is the mushroom dish. And I know Michael Hunter, when he makes it, I'll go Pinot Chardonnay depending on the event, and our guests just lose their minds.
Oh, yeah. So talk a little bit about just the vegan protests. Is people upset by the restaurant? I love the one time where, what did the chef do the window in front of some vegan protesters?
So it's pretty well documented. Chef Michael Hunter is actually his name. It really is Hunter, H-U-N-T-R.
Oh, God, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
His name is...
There's a beautiful alliteration there.
He was destined for this job.
Absolutely. Well, it's actually his restaurant. So him and Jody, they own the restaurant, and Michael does, and Jody does all aspects. He's either in the kitchen, in the books, all over, and really, they've been so supportive of what I do, and really, it's been such a pleasure. I mean, I met Michael Hunter at a cabin up north years ago.
Of course you did.
And he was a little shy, and then we slowly, eventually I started working with him through his old GM, Matt. And so the whole vegan protest, they've been trolling the neighborhood. They have targeted other restaurants.
Yeah.
So we were in Dundas West. They've been kind of moving through, going to different places. And then they had a little protest there. And after several nights, they were asked to move, didn't. Michael, being a small restaurant, it's hard.
Yeah.
Especially in little neighborhoods. It's hard. Restaurant business is not an easy business. So when you have this distraction, I mean, it nerves not only your guests, but your employees. It's unnerving. And we have this big window. It's right there. You can't escape it. It's, if they're allowed, right in front of the restaurant. We have a full window restaurant. So the one afternoon, Chef Michael Hunter came to the front of the bar and started to work on a cut of meat.
Good.
Taunting them a little bit, it escalated from that point. And then the attention, the media really hit, and it really snowballed.
Oh, yeah, that story.
Everyone started piping in.
Oh, yeah, that story. It's funny how that works in the media, which is my background. It takes that little hook, and then that visual, and then it just blows up, and everyone is interested in it. And my thing to the people that are vegan or PETA, I get it. And, there's a lot of horrible treatment of animals, but it just seems to me, Antler should not be where the protest should be. Hmm. McDonald's, places that have incredible environmental damage, where you hear about the treatment of the cows or the chickens.
Absolutely.
That's where it should be. Not at Antler, where there's the utmost respect for both the
Absolutely.
Animal and for nature.
Absolutely. It really is. We get fresh meat twice a month. Like, we nose to tail, everything's used. We really try to forage and everything as local as possible, and I've had some incredible meals there. Because it is local, it's sustainable. That is the core of what we do, who we are, and the respect for the animals of the utmost respect. Yeah. Our goal is to give a great experience to our customers, our guests, but also to the animals themselves. So it was interesting. I was actually in the neighborhood one of the nights, and it was just chaotic. It really was, and it was. The staff, it really impacted a lot at the moment as it was happening. Now it's kind of easy, not easy, but in the after the time passed, we didn't know what was happening in those few weeks because it was constant. They kept calling us out. There were first some news reports were going against it. So it was really, we were in this weird balance.
You were in the media storm.
It was
That's a scary
lot,
place
yeah.
to be.
And it's it was. And it was, and then everyone, people started supporting, people didn't. You had both sides. So it was quite interesting. I think the team just handled it beautifully. It was a lot of attention. And, you know, very deserved. The team works very hard. I've known Chef Hunter for a long time now, and he's a spectacular chef. I have done so many wine events, and I've never had them run so smoothly when I work with that kitchen. It is like clockwork, and they're very professional, and I can't be happier for all the success. And just,
did the controversy help? Like, overall, in terms of how much busier were you? Because I'll be honest, I didn't know about Antler until that story came out.
Well, neither did most of North America.
Yeah.
It really got picked up. Joe Rogan's been around there. We've had a lot of celebrities just supporting, and it really has been great. I mean, for a small business.
What did Joe Rogan order? Do you know, does he even drink?
Yeah.
Because I know he's marijuana.
I know one of the nights. What did
Rogan have? What wine did he
have? The Pinot Noir, the Veracino Pinot Noir.
Uh-huh.
So I kept asking. So that's from Ben Hodgson. Hi, Ben. So the Veracino Pinot Noir he had. We don't have too many wines from California. It is a one-page list. Because it is a small restaurant, we're about, you know, sub 40 seats.
Yeah.
I can have pages. So we just don't. We don't have the space. There's no
space. You
have
the space for it, and there's nowhere to put it. And yeah. Well, tell me about the wine program.
It is so much fun. They really... Oh, they are phenomenal. We have a beautiful by the glass program, and it's quite extensive. We have at least...
How many?
Oh, gosh. Where are we at right now? 16
total?
Yeah. For by the glass, plus extras. For a small restaurant.
For a small restaurant. Actually, I'm surprised by that. I asked this question to anyone that's connected with restaurants. How pissed off do you get when you see a place, say they're a wine bar, but they've got the same four or five reds, the same four or five whites, and it's always going to be, oh, there's the New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, and there's the obligatory one Riesling that's not that good. There's the Chard, and there's the two Pinot Grigios.
Mm-hmm.
Like, does that annoy you when you see that?
Absolutely. But you know what? Every restaurant has a circumstance of why they have the wines.
Yeah.
So I guess in my older
age... Oh, you're defensive.
Everyone
defends these restaurants.
No, it's
bleep
it's
these
not.
Restaurants.
I know they say
wine bar. And the thing is, 6 months later, it's the same list.
I don't disagree.
I don't mind you if that's your wine list. Don't call yourself a wine bar.
I don't disagree, but you know what? To each their own. If they want to do that, that's for them.
You're way nicer than I.
But you know what, though? Let the customers decide, right? I mean, I'm not going to... talk about ill about the industry or, you know, what people decide. People are still learning about wine. The thing is that the customers will tell you.
I know.
If they're not happy, they'll let you know.
Yeah.
So as long as we have, if that's what you think your customers want, by all means.
You're very political.
Customer-centric. It's all about the customer, right?
In that part, we agree with. So don't lie to the customer and say you're a wine
bar.
What would you pair? Let's do this like this. What are some of the funky meats you guys have?
Oh, venison always, which
okay.
is not like funky. It's like we don't do like kangaroo or snake or those are not sustainable. They're not local. Kangaroos are not local.
Would you pair with snake?
It's a little bit. I actually have had it. What would I have?
Okay.
I probably do Riesling because it's like a little chewy, and I think Riesling just goes with everything.
Okay,
then it's like white meaty, so I would probably say Riesling. But I love Riesling.
We all love Riesling. Everyone who does this pod, we always talk about Riesling.
So we do fish. We do everything.
What about venison? What's your favorite?
That's a hard one because I've got some real big loves. But my recent one is. The K15 from Nusa Blanc, the Carignan.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely adore Carignan.
Really? Because Carignan, okay, you're a hipster right now, and I love it.
No, it is.
Carignan
is
never, because Carignan's always the ugly stepsister in the Southern French blend. And like, I'll be honest, when I see, this is a Carignan dominated blend, I usually go somewhere else. Tell me why I'm wrong.
Oh, no, this is 100%. So this one is 100% Carignan, made it a little bit more of a natural style. And yes, sometimes you feel it. But it is juicy, it is enjoyable, and it is pleasurable.
Yeah.
My friends, they come to Antler all the time, and they're usually wine newbies, and they're only like, Chris, I don't ever know what to order. So usually, you know, help them. I'll pre-select some wines for them. And every time I serve this wine, it is an amazing value wine, and it is juicy, it is big. It hits all the things you want in a gorgeous red wine.
Yeah.
It has the intensity of the old vine. Oh, I love Carignan. I know it's not the most fashionable, but it delivers on all the things that makes a beautiful red wine.
All right.
And I serve it to so many guests, and they're almost surprised by that. And I think that's what I love doing. Like, we can always do the normal. I love Merlot. I love Pinot. But that is a little bit of an adventure. And I think that's what being a sommelier is, you know, teaching a little, like using it as a teaching moment and taking them outside of their boundary while still serving them something that they'll drink.
All right, so that goes into the next question. And I'm going to bounce back, by the way. I want to know, you know, what... and also, we got to order food because you're hungry. What are you getting? What are you? I'm going to get the... I'm in a French place. I always get the duck. Ooh. I mean, it's just so predictable, but... I gotta
love
stay
this
true
menu.
To me.
Even though Amanda's not here anymore, Chef A-Ray, I love you. But the restaurant's in great shape. I'm looking at the menu, and I am loving so many amazing things.
What are you getting? What are you getting? You're stalling.
Oh,
you're stalling.
No, I am. No, I just have to look. Oh, I'll pick something a la minute.
All right.
Something. Oh.
Because so when the good. Waiter comes back, there's nothing worse when one person's ready to order and the other isn't. And then the waiter comes, and... For me, it's like, wait, no, don't go away because you won't come back for like 8 more minutes and I'm hungry. I want to start the food process right now. I want to get this going.
Considering I just said Riesling, I'm looking at the pork knuckle and maybe a glass of Riesling.
There you go.
Yeah, it's probably that.
All right. There you go. What are some of the tips for you in terms of trying to, because this podcast, a lot of it's trying to make wine approachable.
Mm-hmm.
What tips would you give people listening that are getting into wine, who want to learn more about wine? And what tips would you give for them to make wine less intimidating?
Oh, God. Wine is a life's journey, so don't rush it. It really is take your step by step. And I would actually, to make wine a little more approachable, talk to people who know. We'll always give you tips. But just start playing around with wines. I found my wine knowledge really got better and just as a tasting, mm-hmm. when we started honing in on special wines or focusing. So when I started tasting 4 Sauvignon Blancs in a row, I really started nailing it.
Yeah.
I really started seeing it. So you can do that yourself. You don't have to, try a few and you start learning what you like and don't like. I mean, wine is always like, oh, look at the score. What this person gives out as a score.
Don't worry about the score.
Exactly. Figure out what you like. And, it's your own journey, what you enjoy drinking. So
now, by the way,
if
every critic gives it 80, maybe worry about the score.
Maybe.
But in general,
Exactly. Like, what's a 92 to 91? Like, oh, my God. Woo. Yeah. So I find my knowledge really grew in my tasting when I started doing little focuses. So even try two Merlot side by side.
Yeah.
No judgment. Start learning what you like and don't like.
Yeah.
And identifying what you enjoy in a wine is the first step. So knowing a few basics, you can learn from so many different websites, some people around you. Even talk to the Somms. If you're at a restaurant, we're here for that reason. We love getting engaged. And we're so lucky being in Ontario and Toronto, and there's so many sommeliers now. Talk to them. They'll take an extra minute or two just to give you some pointers and talk to them. They're free. They're here for you.
Yeah. What's the biggest difference between getting a newbie on a Carignan? Carignan. I never now pronounce it correctly. Or when you're at George and you're selling someone, some Grand Cru from Corton.
Interestingly enough, though, I have to say, George is interesting because a lot of people already know wine there.
Yeah.
We have a lot of wine lovers who go there, and that's why it's so much
fun. That's supposed to be a different, sorry to interrupt, different challenge.
Exactly.
The wine lover who knows a ton and is very set versus the intimidated
A little more
newer,
yeah. So you still have some newer wine lovers, and they definitely want the guidance there. But I would say as a difference between the restaurants, George is a little unique where people come in with their Grand Crus. Or they're 1998 or 89 or 74 Riojas.
Yeah.
So that's the fun part.
What's the corkage at George?
Oh, God. What is it? This is $30.
That's fair.
I don't know. We open the bottles. No.
So it's
not.
It's
pretty fair.
It's not 50 fair. Like it is at. What's this?
Another. So many places now in Toronto. Mind you, there are. I mean, there are costs involved, so I get it. But you know what? That's the fun part. So at George. We get a combination of new and a combination of very experienced. And people take out their phones and they show me just a Cantarelli. They're like, oh, I was in Amarone. I'm at Cantarelli. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
They will go through their archives and it's so exciting to be on that floor. People will be, oh, I was in Porto last week. And then I'll change my mind of what I want to pair the wines to. Or they're like, oh, we're going to Sicily next year. So I'll give them a preview of Sicily. And people are so, they love to travel. They love sharing it. I love pulling it out of them. And we talk about usually travel and wine. And they usually go hand in hand together. So once I learn a little bit about their travel plans, either previously or future, I really try to kind of weave the recommendations. Because it is. tasty menus. A big majority of it, and we don't have a set wine per course.
Yeah.
It really is up to the sommelier's choice. It really is somm choice, and we learn to the customer because every customer has a different experience. Sometimes they'll do veg, sometimes they'll do pescatarian. So the tasting menu switches table to table. So we're always on our toes.
And yeah, I've only had good experiences at George.
I hope so.
All right. What would you pair with steak tartare?
Oh, depends if it's spicy or not, because sometimes you can have a hint of spice and mustard. Actually, we're going to get some food.
He left. I think I gave him the thought that we were okay.
Oh, no.
I thought it pointed. Oh, okay. We've got to have the waiter back.
We'll get it.
Okay. Okay.
We'll get the food order.
And I don't mean to interrupt, but I want you to talk about steak tartare.
No, steak tartare. So if it's spicy, I mean, I like something light-bodied and a little crisp. So Gamay, Pinot, Cabernet Franc, especially if it's a little bit, if they slice in peppers or do some little mustard. So I love a light red, especially a lightly, chateau temperature or cellar temperature, slightly chilled. So,
and it's funny about that is that people would think, oh, meat raw meat needs heavy wine, but in fact, the exact opposite of what you want for something like that.
What would you pair it with?
With steak tartare. It's funny. I was actually thinking like Cru Beaujolais.
Yeah.
You know, that
thin
was
skin, something, you know, a little thin skin. So something northern French. I mean, it's classic to do France. If you had to do New World, and let's do New World and Old World, actually. So for the
I'll do Pearl Morissette Cab Franc.
Okay, that's a good one. What would be for myself? Oh, gosh. Something from Tasmania or even sparkling. Something like really beautiful sparkling. I love the sparklings coming out of South Africa right now. They're nice and dry and crisp and, you know, Pinot friendly and, you know, Pinot forward. So I would actually do even sparkling. Sparkling and tartare. And in honor of Heather McDougall, I'm going to do also champagne. You know, I might as well round it out. Yeah. You have to give us some choice. And also, you know, a little more tanning champagne is always good.
Former guest on the Matt Talks Wine Stuff.
Absolutely. Love champagne. Yeah. So the Barèche, the extra brew is... It's a wine you can chew. It's a champagne you really chew on. That thing would go beautifully with tartare.
How'd you get into wine? Do you have a moment? What's your origin story? Was there that light goes off, epiphany moment? Was it just over time you woke up one day and go, I love this?
Well, I got lucky. We always had a farm in my family, and I noticed on my necklace, you can see I've got my bee. Yep. So we've always had a family farm. We're actually ready to order.
We're ready to order.
Awesome.
All right,
go ahead,
you.
Matt. No, you go first, Matt.
All right. I'm going to get the duck carnet, please. Thank you.
Which one are you getting?
I'm getting the duck.
I'll do the comfy de canard.
That's what I'm doing.
I know. I'll get the same thing. No, you know what? Sorry. I apologize.
you can order the same one as me.
Oh, I'm just.
It's fine.
Oh, I do want the... Okay, you know what? I'll do the poly roti. I changed my mind a billion times today. Thank you.
Well, see, I feel bad now.
No, stop.
Mean, but it is the classic thing. Like, you know, can two people order the same... Well, let's talk about that. Then we're getting back to you in the farm.
Yep.
Can two people order the same thing on a menu? Especially, like, if it's a good menu.
Yes.
So you don't look down on that.
No.
No?
Not at all.
You don't judge a little bit?
No.
Come on, no one's listening. You know,
no.
If I was working in a restaurant with a really good menu and two people order the same thing, I know it's about the customer. I know it's about the customer being happy. But mix it up. You know, spice it up a little bit.
I'm getting less judgy in my older age.
Okay,
wait.
I'm going to get you to judge.
Okay, go for it. Try me.
Both couple orders the chicken.
Okay.
Both couples orders the steak.
Chicken's great.
They order the steak. They get it well done and ask for ketchup.
Hmm.
Judge, go.
Would you like some Rosé Zinfandel with that wine? That's my judging.
That's your judging. Thank you.
I would just recommend a sweet wine to match with that very sweet dish.
We have some white Zinfandel. We're not even going to charge you for it. There you go.
There you go.
Would you like a straight straw or a wacky one?
Exactly.
So you, getting into wine, family, farm.
So farm. So I was really lucky to come from the family that my father worked in technology. That's kind of where I get it from. And then we always had a family farm, and it was usually an apiary. It was something I grew up as a kid. I mean, there's photos of us at 2, 3, 4 running around the farm.
Yeah.
It was a place where family congregated. There was a pool. We traveled far. So it was a really special place growing up. As we got older, we kind of pulled away from it. You know, lives get busy. And so we always had a farm in my family. So being connected to local farmers and always right. doing that really was integral and really core to who I am. And I absolutely adore that experience. And the goal was actually through the family, through the winery. Through the family, the goal was for my parents to have a winery.
Yeah.
It was their vision. So they started it, and we were really lucky to be involved from a very young age. I mean, I traveled to Loire, my first trip to Loire Valley, I think I was 15 years old. You know, I went to Vouvray, and I'm like, I don't even know how to drink.
Wow.
So I was really lucky to experience France. So it's a combination of having a farming background, which is what a winery is. Winery is not where you parade in heels. It's a farm.
Yeah.
You know, oh, yeah. First and foremost. And then I was really lucky to travel to France. By the time I was 18, I already went to Bordeaux and most parts of France. Actually, the famous story is my mom, she was pregnant with me in Champagne. And so I think I visited my first official visit to France was when I was, you know, in Champagne.
Yep.
Wine has been with me in some capacity. Coming from a European family, yeah.
Very different then.
Yes. Yeah. Wine is, you know, around the table.
It's part of the meal.
It's encouraged to a point of... you have a respect for it. And then also being a tall person, yeah, we were 15, 16, 17 years old in Paris. We were served wine all the time without any question. So those are the key moments in my life that wine was always around, and I just had this very early exposure to it. Like, I saw Margaux and I was, yeah, like 17, 18 years old, and I knew what that meant.
Yeah.
I had shivers looking at it. I mean, you're down this huge row, this huge driveway, and... But at that age, I still understood, and I was reading about these crews, and I was learning, and like you're just absorbing, and we're visiting the chateaus. I'm like, oh, this is the coolest thing ever. So that was really it really was my family that influenced me, and I was really lucky to have such an amazing exposure to wine and a really nice, healthy relationship with it where I respected it. And then because of the farming background, you put that together, I mean... I was meant
yeah,
to.
Yeah, that makes complete sense.
By 21, I was already in it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just European background, farming. Yeah. I mean, that is.
Like we were growing grapes. Like, we started planting. We were deciding what to plant when I was barely
legal. Does the family still have winery now?
Yes. The winery. What's the name? Rosewood.
Rosewood.
Yeah, Rosewood. Okay. So, you know, and we really were all kind of part of the decisions, and it was really a great experience, and it's a dream. It really is a dream. And I know how lucky I am and how lucky we are. And I never took it for granted. And it's a lot of work. But that's how I learned about wine. So it's a little bit unique. I didn't have like that one moment.
It was fantastic.
A combination of so many different...
Yeah.
And really my teens just kind of set me up. And by the time I was 19, I was like into it. 21, I was hard into it. And then from then on, I haven't really looked back.
Oh, no. And that's one thing I love about doing this podcast. Everyone is a different... has a different origin story. You're around all over the place. Like, you're at events, you're at restaurants. How would you describe the Toronto wine scene right now?
Ooh, interesting question. I'm going to lean towards my ladies. The ladies are absolutely kicking butt right now in the industry. I think that's how we would describe it.
I have far more female than male interviews on this so far.
And I'm so happy to hear that. Yeah. You know, not only is the wine industry... and the technology, they're both very female-oriented.
Yeah.
Sorry, male-oriented. So, I mean, it's lovely to see a woman just absolutely be on top of their game.
Yeah. Can I interrupt? But to add to what you just said, you asked the one question I've never asked anyone, and like, you know, any female, is what's it like being a woman in the industry? Because I feel any woman that I know, like, you know, from Heather and Emily and Ann Sperling, which is going to be Jules, like all these interviews that have either done or going to be released.
Yep.
I'm sure they've been asked that 100 times by other media. And the weird thing is, in my background, all I have been, it's been surrounded by, you know, certainly more than 50% women than men.
Mm-hmm.
Well more than 50%. So that's just kind of my norm. I don't even think of it as, this industry is more tilted towards one gender. Now, I know that it is, and that women have had it far tougher, and, you know, the horrible stories of abuse and sexism.
Mm-hmm.
But in my very privileged little bubble, I get confused when I hear that, because I'm like, wait a minute, everyone I know in wine is women, and they're really bleeping good at their job.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Not only is the winemaking, and I've actually seen it. Well, when we first started with our first winemaker, Natalie Spikowski, she was one of very few winemakers that were women. I mean, and obviously Sue and staff was, and then there's, it was, I can almost count on one hand at that point. This is in the Niagara, Ontario wine scene. This is when Prince Edward County was just barely on the surface. I mean, this is way back. So I felt and I saw it really early on. And I noticed, and being young and curious, when you're, I mean, I'm 19, 20, 21, 22. Very.
You'd be an outlier. You'd be sticking out, the 22-year-old girl.
And it's a generational
wine.
Too.
Yep.
It's been a generation. It's not just the gender, but also generational. I stuck out. I'll never forget. I was on the I4C board. And we were trying to decide what band should play on the Friday night. Because we had a Friday night, usually band. And this is in the early days of I4C. And Harold looped me in.
And what is, for people who don't know, what is that?
Oh, International Cool Climate Chardonnay Celebration. Beautiful event. Really great. Celebrating Chardonnay, not only in Canada, but all over the world. And more on the cooler side. So it means it's kind of grown in a little bit of a lighter style.
Yeah.
Even though it's usually so hot. And all the winemakers that come here say, this is cool climate. But it's a beautiful event. And we were on the boardroom table. And I have to say, my friends are Kells. And I went to university with them.
Nice.
Yeah. So
great guys. One of them opened a bar in Hamilton.
Yeah, oh, two of them. Yeah. So they would do that. So I was really lucky. The one person that lived across from me happened to be a rock star. And Nick Dykes, and he's the bassist for Air Kells. And I was at I actually made that board meeting, and we were deciding between, I think it was Jarvis Church and Arkells. And there I am, one of the only women, youngest by a mile, and we were talking about what band, and I was really trying not to show my bias.
Yeah.
I just kept sitting there. I was sitting on my fingers. I was like, don't say anything. Don't lean the conversation. And I really was, but I couldn't. I eventually, and thankfully Peter Boyd had my back. So he's like, oh, yeah. And no one really knew at that point. This is like early 20s. This is, about 8 years ago. It's 7 years ago before they are who they are right now. And having that support. So what is it like? It feels a lot better when you have support. I think that's the main message. Sometimes, it's intimidating being sometimes younger and a female. You know, we don't have the experience always. And, women.
And wine is intimidating for the people in the industry because no matter how much you know, you'll never know it all. You're not even going to come close.
Exactly. So having that support, having someone to back you up and help you when you need it, or just to help your idea come through, means the world. And I'll never forget that moment. And we had an amazing concert. We sold out. We got a young demographic. And it was an amazing year for I4C. And I was really proud of them. We just, they kept getting better and better every year. That helped our Kells. So many people benefited from that. And it was that one moment at 13th Street where we had the boardroom meeting. And I'll never forget, so long ago. But having someone that was a little bit older, a little more knowledgeable, and really helped some of my ideas or really supported you.
Nice.
And that's what we need. We need to stick our necks out for each other a little bit more. And sometimes it's intimidating with big voices in the room, a lot of experience. There's a lot of money on the table. And that was a really pivotal moment, I remember.
And so, JP Kola, if you're listening, come on this podcast. He's emailed me back once.
All right,
I'll ask one more. I usually go long, but our dinner's going to come soon.
No problem.
And you will come on again, right? Because
anytime.
There's tons of other stuff. I want to get even more into the Toronto wine scene, but I need your help because you're good.
Absolutely.
You're all about the customer. And you're all about making people feel good, feel happy, feel less intimidated. And you're the perfect guest because for you, wine is fun.
Mm-hmm.
And
it should be. Should be fun.
Absolutely. That's what it is. I've been recently having a crisis of conscience where I'm telling people don't drink things like Apothic Red. Mm. And it's not about California or you can't drink a large company. You must drink tiny artisanal. It's not about that. It's just about the sugar.
Mm.
It's about the 17 grams of sugar per liter. But, so on one level, I'm telling people not to drink it. But then, the idea is don't judge. Whatever. If someone loves it, that's good. And maybe then it'll lead them to drinking something else. I guess maybe you go to Amarone. And hopefully eventually you get to lower sugared wines. But I had this struggle. Mm-hmm. There's certain wines I want to tell people stay away from this. But the other side is I don't want to be the judgy guy.
So that's an interesting question. How
It's tough.
It's a tough one. So I usually say don't drink this. I'm like, how about I recommend something a little different? And you don't have to take them all the way to dry. I mean, you don't have to go all the way to the other side. Just start weaning them. It's like weaning them off of something. So that's how I kind of do it. If I know they want their big cab, I'll give them the big cab.
Yeah.
But then that's why I love Carignan, for example, and I love a little bit of these offbeat Southern French or, you know, different, you know, Pinot Noir from Northern Italy, which I absolutely adore, Pinot Neros.
Yeah.
Show them variation and something unique, and that's why I absolutely adore that Carignan. As an example, I'm like, okay, I know you like these big, bold wines, but let me try something different. Let me take you on a different journey, and I think that's a perfect example of, okay, I'll give you something big, bold, and juicy, a little bit different, and it might be a little bit drier, and you slowly, you can't just go cold turkey in wine. You have to...
So get them like the J.Lore Merlot, and then from the J.Lore Merlot... I
wean
like that.
Them
okay.
off. Yeah, yeah. Wean
it's
them
like,
off.
It's like a methadone drip.
Absolutely.
You know?
Just wean them off of it. But yeah, I mean, I remember in Niagara, the winemakers would go together and they taste each other's wines. And I remember hearing that one of the big wineries actually added more sugar, and year to year they looked at the sales. And yeah, obviously a lot of things, you know, contribute to sales.
Yeah.
But they tested different batches, and yeah, the sweeter one sold more.
It's so true. Everyone says they like dry, but they drink sweet.
It happens all, you know, I used to work at a tasting bar at a winery. So, I mean, I used to be with so many customers this way, and that's actually a really great way to learn about wine, because you are talking, when we're in a restaurant, we don't get a lot of face time with customers. Like, George's is an anomaly, because we spend a lot of time with our customers there.
Yeah.
But at a winery, you're with a customer for sometimes an hour, talking about everything about wine and their preferences. So you really learn about what people are drinking. That really is. I recommend any somm to work at a tasting bar. You spend so much time about, you learn so much about them, but also just wine and how people interact with wine and appreciate wine, how they talk about wine. And because I had that as my first kind of like job in the wine industry, I remember I was so nervous. I remember Michael Pincus came and my hand was shaking, and I remember we were barely open and he came to check us out. And this was February of like Cuvée weekend. Over 10 years ago now, and I was a mess. And from then, actually, I was kind of hooked. I'm like, wow, that was an adrenaline.
Yeah.
And it was so exciting, and we got so many different guests, and it's you can have one wine writer right there. You can have someone really new. You can have an old friend there, and you have to be able to pivot.
Got
to
juggle
all these conversations about wine. So I always say, if you're a somm in Toronto, Niagara, Prince Edward County, you're not far away. Get behind that damn tasting bar, because it is such good training. And you spend a lot of time with the customer. I mean, we spend hours sometimes with customers.
That is great advice. All right, I think we'll end it here because I know our food is coming soon. And I got to look at the wine list.
I got to
figure
what.
Yeah, we gotta figure it out. We're going by the glass. We're splitting a bottle. We'll talk about that off. Mm-hmm. But hey, Chris, I really appreciate you coming on the pod. Best thing I can say is every time I'm at a wine event and I see you, I'm like, oh, good. The fun level just got higher.
Oh, and, I love seeing you too.
Yeah, so thanks so much for coming.
Of course, thank you.
Thanks everyone for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with the Interesting People podcast. Remember, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Audioboom, wherever good podcasts are sold, you will find this one. Rate, review, tell a friend. Unless you didn't like the podcast, then just, you know, move on with your day. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting. Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.